You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 18th of March, 2021, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming live today at RadioAlbion.com because we have with us geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from RussJournal.org and The Barnes Review. Matt, good day, sir. How are you doing?
Does anybody in the world who could connect what we're dealing with right now in this society to the Mongol Empire? It's me. I'm pretty much unique in that respect.
Excellent, excellent, excellent lead in today, because we are going to be talking about Genghis Khan for two reasons, really. Radio Albion is a member of VK, and I was looking through VK the other day, which is like the Russian equivalent to Facebook, and a guy on there called Sergey Vladimir had a link to Genghis Khan, and he was saying Genghis Khan is white, and this link that he showed me had a lot of really interesting stuff on there. And I remembered that you did a podcast a while back on Lev Gumilev, I think his name was, this Russian historian, and he talked about Genghis Khan being white in that as well. And this week we had an article in the Guardian which was praising Genghis Khan, and of course they were praising Genghis Khan basically because he wasn't white. I'll just quote this article here from The Guardian. They say, "His empire lasted a century and a half and eventually covered nearly a quarter of the Earth's surface. His murderous Mongol armies were responsible for the massacre of as many as 40 million people. Even today, his name remains a byword for brutality and terror. But boy, was Genghis green. Genghis Khan, in fact, may have been not just the greatest warrior, but the greatest eco-warrior of all time, according to a study by the Carnegie Institution's Department of Global Energy. It has concluded that the 13th century Mongol leader's bloody advance, laying waste to vast swathes of territory and wiping out entire civilizations en route, may have scrubbed 700 million tons of carbon from the atmosphere, roughly the quantity of carbon dioxide generated in a year through global petrol consumption, by allowing previously populated and cultivated land to return to carbon-absorbing forest. An intriguing notion, certainly, but possibly not a guaranteed vote winner for the Green Party's next manifesto." And of course, I mean, basically they're talking about this guy wiping out 40 million people, and he probably set fire to lots of forests on the way. And that's not really the reason why they're praising him. Really, the reason why they're praising him is because they think that he is non-white. And this is evidence, according to them, of a non-white civilization. And most people do tend to think that Genghis Khan was Mongolian. They think that he was Chinese or he was from Outer Mongolia. But looking at the evidence for this, it's particularly scant, particularly when you're looking at primary source documents, like pictures that were actually drawn of him at the time when he was alive, which clearly depict him as being white. And I recall in the episode that you did on Lev Gumilev, Matt, that you were saying that it's just sort of generally known in Russia that Genghis Khan was white. There's no idea that he was a Mongolian or Chinese. So what was the truth about this great Khan then? Did he really wipe out entire civilizations of people? And how many people understand that he was white in Russia?
Well, the racial element in Russia is fairly well known, because there you have a lot of contemporary paintings. In Russia today, the mainstream opinion. Now, I've written a lengthy article, academic article on this topic. I think it was in the Barnes Review. I can't remember. I can never remember. And then on my website, I have a rough draft version of that. where you have the, you know, Russian Historical Society, which is an official institution, rejecting the idea that Russia was ever occupied by this Asiatic organization, that it's impossible for a group of nomads almost literally overnight to, you know, sparsely populated, create an army of hundreds of thousands and take over most of the planet. And not just that, but organize it very skillfully with the most modern of bureaucratic techniques. All of a sudden, the contemporary art of the time shows him, including the work of Marco Polo, shows him as a normal European-looking king. Now, the racial element, I'm not sure. I've come across it in Russian quite often, but nothing about the traditional story of the Mongol Empire makes any sense. To be able to mobilize within a few years from a very sparsely populated, totally disorganized, herding population, essentially, you know, something just above hunter-gatherers, that he could put 300,000 horsemen into the field is absolutely absurd. The story of them coming into Russia, and that wasn't Genghis, it was his Batu Khan who did that. Every Mongol warrior had three horses, in the wintertime no less, no foraging, no food source. So what, 300,000 times three horses coming in with no substantial resistance from the Russians, completely, you know, without any kind of siege weaponry, without any real supplies, taking over huge areas with minimal resistance, and then these people allegedly giving charters and privileges to the church. You read about, I mean, I've read all of the contemporary medieval accounts in Russia about these events, and none of them mention an Asiatic appearance. None of them mention any difference in appearance at all. None of them mention translators. None of them mention that they don't speak the local languages. The papal emissary, Carpini, says nothing about them being Asiatic or translators, or that they were foreigners, that this was a foreign occupation. All sides in these wars that developed afterwards, we're talking about the High Middle Ages here in the West, they used this Mongol cavalry on both sides. And all the contemporary paintings, and my favorite is the Suzdal, the northern Russian paintings with Alexander Nevsky. You can't tell the difference between either side. They use the same symbols. They use the same flags. They use the same armor, the same weaponry. You can't tell the difference. And yet when they show, the same people show pictures of the Turkish wars, you can clearly tell the difference. They look different. They act differently. You know, but, you know, Russia, the term for Russia in the Middle Ages was Great Tartary. A Tartar was not an ethnic designation. It simply was someone in the service of the Tsar. All the ancient medieval Russian chronicles, the miniatures, you can't tell the difference between either side. But Genghis Khan himself, all contemporary accounts, and one of the main ones is the Persian historian Rashid ad-Din, who was contemporary of this occupation. He writes, Genghis Khan was born most, the children of Genghis Khan were born mostly with gray, blue eyes and blonde hair. Nothing, you know, I mean, on and on. Even the term Tartar itself as an ethnic marker, only about 200 years ago, you hear it for the very first time. The term Mongol has nothing to do with Mongolia. It comes from the Greek megalo, or great. You know, like megalomania, megalo, something great, something extraordinary. It was a description. The Mongols even used the double eagle. And, you know, the site, some of the sources that I use that you've noted show proof of this. You know, Kiev, for example, when this invasion first took on, the center of Russia fell in a matter of days. No siege weapons, no nothing. They just simply capitulated. But during the Polish invasion, in a time of troubles, Smolensk held out from 1609 to 1611. These cities were designed to deal with siege weapons. You know, there was no garrison in Russia. There was no occupation. there was not even a complaint. These princes served these alleged invaders with no problem. There was no unpopularity here. That, you know, Russia began to develop substantially with them. I don't, you know, and even their alleged capital in Sarai, there isn't a shred, there's no architectural monument that anything significant happened there. But I think most importantly, in Mongolia, northern China itself, there is no reference to any occupation of Russia. There's no architecture. There's no, allegedly Russia had to, they took hundreds of thousands of craftsmen and gold and silver and everything from Russia and brought it back to Mongolia. There isn't a shred of this left. No one noted it. There's no contemporary mention of this occupation of Russia. The whole thing falls apart. It's a house of cards. And somehow only in the West is this prejudice maintained. But in the East, in Russia, Eastern Europe, it's completely rejected.
Well, there's no trace of Mongolian DNA that's been found in the, among the Russian population. So what you're saying there is these people that we know as the Mongols, they were actually the megalos. That's where the term comes from, which we also use in megalomania, so which means that they were mighty men, basically. And according to this document or this article, this link, it's a very long link. It's very, very detailed that Sergei Vladimir posted. According to this link, they actually originated in a place completely different to Mongolia, and he outlines it on a map, and Mongolia is miles away, but Genghis Khan's horde actually originated in another place, which is more closely linked with the Scythians. Am I right in thinking that? Do you want to talk about where they actually originated from?
Well, there's a few theories as to that. That there is a Scythian connection even with the Cossacks. I think the most dominant theory that I've come across is that the Cossack hordes are, to some extent, their descendants. That this is the kind of, in the steppes of southern Russia, this was the entity that eventually, dominated. And that there was a huge northern-southern distinction. It's, contemporary sources are difficult. There's a lot of forgeries out there. My article really came from mostly the negative point of view. But this kind of this Cossack connection, and there's always been this alleged Mongol connection with them anyway, that that this is in essence where this occupying force came from. And even that, people like Pugachev and Razin, all of these rebellions against the Tsardom came from these very same people. It's the only thing that makes any sense. They clearly were Slavic. They were probably Orthodox in one form or another. And they weren't anti-Russian. They didn't do anything that it wouldn't be done in a normal civil war. So I've come across the percentage. Yeah, I'm sure there were Asians in some of these armies, but they certainly were nowhere near the dominant element. And they certainly weren't as huge as depicted. And of course, the numbers are all over the place. Nothing makes any sense here about their origins, except we know that nowhere does anyone mention a translator or the fact that they looked or appeared different from anybody in Russia at the time.
So they could have been the last whites that there were in Asia, making their way into Europe, and that's why we don't find a trace of their DNA. They just blended in with the rest of the Russians. Or was he really as brutal as they say? I mean, they say here in The Guardian that he wiped out entire civilizations of people, 40 million people he wiped out. What record is there of him wiping out entire civilizations? Because it seems as if they just worked with these civilizations, this Russian civilization. So what's the truth about that, Matt?
Well, I'm less familiar with the Asiatic aspect of this. There certainly was an empire. It just had nothing to do with Russia. Because even the alleged centers of Mongol occupation of Russia, there's no record of anything being there. There were these Asiatic empires that were extremely brutal. And the theory was if you wipe out people in one city, then cities in your path will just give up. So the theory is that they're gonna save lives. But even, you know, Tamerlane, who came much later, is depicted everywhere as a white man. In fact, there's a Turkish, I think it's in the article, that a bust of him. You know, he could be Charlemagne from his appearance. You know, the key argument here is that every single contemporary image of the so-called Mongols, wherever you find them, is of European background. Genghis Khan was supposed to have had red hair. All contemporaries say that, especially the Persians. You have Turkish historians saying the same thing. Only much, much later, suddenly, he became this Asiatic monster. Now, 40 million, I have no idea. That's way too convenient of a number. All these empires, especially in that part of the world, were brutal. So I have no doubt that there were all kinds of allegedly the biggest massacre of all time was the extermination of the northern Chinese peasantry. That may well be true. Although it still begs the question as to how a group of nomads can defeat a very large, powerful, settled empire or settled society at all, like the Chinese. This is something that has to be explained, and as far as I'm concerned, has never been explained.
Well, I think the Assyrians were particularly brutal and violent, weren't they? They were part of Asia, but they were a white people, and the Babylonians as well. And it seems to me that this link with the Scythians, I mean, that's fairly close by to there, and you've got the Persians that are recording this. I think this was the last of the white race that was in Asia, making its way into Europe. I mean, how big was this empire then? Because they talk about it stretching from Poland all the way to the Mediterranean and being administrated by these Khans. So what history is there? How big was the actual empire?
Well, if you accept the traditional story, it's the largest land empire in history. From, you know, the farthest east, with the exception of Japan, who for some reason they can never conquer, all the way to Central Europe, including all of Central Asia. Now, again, the Asian part of it, I'm not really going to comment on. There's all kinds of contemporary records that are saying all kinds of different things. There is one allegedly contemporary record called The Secret History of the Mongol Empire, which I've read the English translation, which I could make no sense out of. It wasn't discovered until, a Russian monk discovered it around the turn of the century. It's all these legendary stories. There's no original of this. It's all written in Chinese. It is completely incoherent. It was translated by Germans. It's all over the place. There's no evidence that this thing, it really is of ancient origin, medieval origin. And it's now in the capital of Mongolia in this big gold case, as if this is this historical document. Because in communist Mongolia, Genghis Khan wasn't really talked about. He was this reactionary, you know. But only since the 1990s, when the Soviet Union fell apart, all of a sudden you have this national revival where the Mongol Empire is at the center. So all this stuff that no one noticed before, the fact that no Chinese or Mongol scholar ever noticed this famous medieval work, you know, until the 90s, with one non-original copy left in the entire universe, just really proves the point. And this became the center of the new Mongol identity. And of course, yeah, there was an Asiatic empire. But was it that large? I tend to doubt it. Again, you have to explain how a group of a handful of nomads were able to do this and organize it in the most modern methods overnight. I mean, you know, within just a decade or so. No one can explain that, especially when they're conquering settled, centralized, powerful entities. It simply doesn't work that way. The technical superiority that they had over the Mongols. Two social systems, really. So it's not so much the armies fighting each other, it's the social systems fighting each other. Any horde coming from nomads can't win a war of attrition. And yet they were supposed to have done it city after city after city after city with, I mean, absolute irresistibility. Not just winning this, but complete domination. And how, with the exception of this crazy medieval document, alleged medieval document that no one noticed until the 20s, there is no contemporary evidence of any of this, at least as far as Mongolia is concerned. So that little, you know, secret history just really confirms the issue here. But no one can explain how a handful of nomads could create an empire like this within a few years and run it so professionally with no technology, no at the time, no written language. I can't make any sense out of it. And only, you know, like 10 years ago, a little more, I realized that in Russia, no one takes that seriously.
Well, when was it then that it came about that people started thinking that he was Mongolian? Because I can remember reading a children's textbook, I think it was probably about 100 years ago. It was about great heroes of Europe, and it included Genghis Khan in this story. It also had Attila the Hun in there, and he was depicted as being white in the images that were accompanying it. And that was about 100 years ago. So how far back do you think it was when people suddenly started saying that Genghis Khan was Mongolian, he was Chinese?
Well, for those interested, my website, rushjournal.org, I have a rough draft of what later became a much longer article on just this issue. It's not a polished, I have it on there as, you know, my first attempt, and then later on it grew and grew and grew. And I deal with these questions there. My theory is that it came from the era of Peter the Great. Peter the Great went about destroying all the local histories of the old aristocratic family, completely centralizing power and wiping out the old tradition of any kind of, you know, aristocratic rule. It was almost a fanatical obsession with him to destroy all elements of local culture, which is one of the reasons that the old believers exploded the way that they did and did as well as they did after that. Peter the Great had to create the myth that prior to him, Russia was this backwards, Asiatic, savage, non-European, incompetent, backwards place. And that was really, so therefore he becomes this enlightened revolutionary. And, of course, it isn't true. And the problem is, of course, piecing together the early history without a whole lot of documents is something that's been a challenge. I've done this for a long time now. So Peter the Great had an interest in creating this or increasing this myth of the Mongol horde as this, you know, crazy, murderous Asiatic people just swept into Russia, and the old Russians having no competence to fight back and fall, just, you know, to attempt to prove the idea that without him, Russia couldn't possibly exist. Russia wasn't even European. Russia was savage. And then Russia's enemies later on, especially the British, grabbed onto this and then painted that dark image all over Europe, and is still dominant in many places today. But the idea that Russia has Mongol blood, Asiatic blood, I've translated genetic articles on this for a long time now, at least some of the abstracts, and it just isn't true. There isn't a shred of Mongol blood or Asiatic blood in the Russian genotype anywhere. And I've, you know, on and on and on I've done this. And I'm not much as an English, unfortunately. So I think it comes from the era of Peter the Great and thereafter. Then, of course, even the Soviet era had an interest in painting that period of time as absolutely backwards. So Russia's enemies in the West and then the revolutionaries in Russia itself both had an interest in painting this ridiculous point of view.
Are there any people that claim ancestry from Genghis Khan? I mean, when you look at the royal families throughout Europe, they claim their ancestry going back centuries to all these famous characters from our past. I mean, are there any people that claim ancestry from him? I mean, what happened to this empire? Did it just disappear? Are there people that claim that they were the son of I keep thinking his name is Tamagotchi, Tamerlane, that say that they were the son of Tamerlane? Are there any people that claim descent from these great Khans?
I guarantee you that you have a whole bunch in Mongolia and, of course, local rulers, but I've never come across them. You know, after his death, the empire was divided either four or five khanates, I guess. The empire, the great Khan, the homeland itself, Chukotka Khan, Blue Horde, the White Horde, Golden Horde. And it was this division where either his sons or trusted generals were able to take over and, again, run it as if it were a modern empire without any education in that. Unfortunately, where these Khanates were located, it's hard to find evidence there was any kind of bureaucratic organization here or anything that would suggest that there is this is the capital of an empire. And that was one of the most important things for me, was that the Sarai capital of the Golden Horde in Russia, in the far south, there's nothing there. Despite the fact that the legend is that thousands and thousands of Russian craftsmen and all these, you know, gold, all these material, everything from old Russia was stolen and brought back there. You would think you would find something. So, but today, starting in the early 90s, Mongolian nationalists claim that this is who we are. And I guarantee you, in that group, you have a few people claiming that they're, you know, Genghis allegedly had so many wives. God knows how many kids he had, legitimate and illegitimate, if that was even a thing with them. So I guarantee you they're out there. But just like in the Russian case, you have so many phonies. It's certainly in someone's interest to claim this. So, you know, I guarantee you they're out there. I've not come across it. And even if I did, I probably wouldn't care very much.
Well, what about the Orthodox Church then? Because they maintained most of the histories going back centuries. What did the Orthodox Church have to say about Genghis Khan? I've read that he was a Buddhist, and yet you were saying that there may have been some Orthodox links earlier. So what was the Orthodox Church's stance on him?
Well, as far as any of the contemporary records, there's no record of him being a Buddhist or much of anything. There was this vague reference to a sky god or something, very, very primitive. It rarely came in. You know, Genghis himself allegedly wrote the Pope of Rome, and so did his successors, claiming to be the ruler of the universe. You didn't exactly have this advanced philosophical culture there. The alleged successors of his in the southern part of Central Asia allegedly converted to Islam. And the, you know, Tartars today are often Islamic, although some of the most loyal pro-Russian ethnic groups in the Federation. The problems here are just so overwhelming. These ethnic connections simply don't exist, and they're brand new. And it's just that there was a break in the Petrian era. That's really all I can say about it right now. The contemporary records are either non-existent or suggest everything we're saying is true. I've never come across a historical phenomenon like this, where there is absolutely nothing, despite it being the largest land empire allegedly in history.
Well, it's very strange, because all the pictures that were drawn at the time when he was alive or just after that, within centuries of it, I mean, we're talking the 11th, 12th, 13th century, there's just tons and tons of pictures of him, and they all show him as a white man with red hair and blue eyes. There's pictures of his son as well. All the people around him are white. And, you know, because when you read about this, you think, oh, well, they can't have had pictures done at the time. That must be why people are thinking that he's Mongolian today. But no, there's just loads and loads of evidence that shows that he's white. And yet when you bring that up to people today, they think, oh, you must be exaggerating, or you're clutching at straws there. But really, it's the people that are clutching at straws are the ones that are saying that he's Mongolian. I have read that there's a Sarmatian link as well. The Horde were riding on horses, and the horses actually had armor on them as well, which was a Sarmatian style. Is that right?
Yeah, you know, you asked me about the Orthodox Church, and as I was answering the question, I forgot the question. Because the Mongols, and this was post-Genghis, allowed the Orthodox Church to function tax-free, gave it all kinds of privileges, which, despite being a nationalist institution, would be a weird thing for a foreign occupier to do, had no difficulty with this. I mean, although they often, because this was a civil conflict, supported, especially in Moscow, especially in places farther north, in Novgorod, places like this, they supported revolutionary movements. But you had Mongols on both sides. So at the time, you know, they weren't enemies. And the church, you know, Mongols sponsored. There was a bishop, allegedly, in the capital, in Sarai. This is, you know, again, this is the most national, the most important institution in Russia, and they're being privileged. But all the Orthodox bishops and monks who were writing at the time don't mention that these people were Asiatic, or they looked strange, or they sounded strange, or they had strange customs. The most you'll find is that some of them are pagan, allegedly, but that could be a lot of things. That could be just a different kind of Orthodoxy. But that's the most you're going to see. There's no racial or linguistic thing that any of the churchmen at the time said.
So the evidence is there. There's copious amounts of it. Genghis Khan was definitely white. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.